you'd better sign in at the attendance office because it's time for Grain of Truth. Please welcome your host, David Innes.
Hello and welcome to Grain of Truth, the show that keeps the truth in at lunchtime. Your grains of truth today. The schoolyard bully who became a veterinary surgeon was very good at put-downs. When an ant colony gets rid of its queen, it becomes an ant republic. And when a 2x4 goes to the airport, it's always the first to board. Nice. The various noises of Grain of Truth. To introduce our panelists for the episode, it's over to our resident scorekeepers, the Boffins!
Thank you, David. From the University of Melbourne, Melbourne campus, representing literature, it's Tim Redmond. And from Murdoch University, Perth campus, representing the zoo, it's Michelle Nussie. And from Charles Sturt University, Wagga Wagga campus, representing heroes, it's Rob Lloyd. And from Deakin University, Burwood campus, representing psychology, it's Rowan Johnson.
The rules of Grain of Truth are simple. Points are awarded to the panelists for their responses to ridiculously absurd questions, scenarios, and topics. Whoever has the most points wins the coveted Grain of Truth prize, which this week is a brick in the wall. Take that, 1970s British education. Now, before we begin the quiz, here's a small challenge for everybody. Can you name the grain of truth that connects all four of our panellists' topics? That's literature, the zoo, heroes, and psychology. And we'll get to the answer at the end of the episode. But I will give you a clue. Surname neutralises vinegar. So there is your clue. Surname neutralises vinegar. But we'll start with round one, which is called The Right Said Ted. Each panellist must deliver a 90-second TED-style presentation relating to a theme. At 60 seconds, they'll hear this noise. And at the 90-second mark, they'll hear this noise. At which they must wrap up their talk. Whoever uses their special skills to present on the theme the best gets the points. The theme of this TED presentation is education. So we'll start with Tim Redmond representing literature on education. Tim, your time starts now.
Thank you, David. Education. I went to the comedy festival, saw Josie Long. She said something that stayed with me. She said, education teaches intelligent people to be kind. And I've thought about that. So in this extended mix TED talk, I'll be blushing across each of my esteemed colleagues' topics of interest. My thesis today is all books are learning books. And by that, I don't just mean these turgid self-help books with their rules and their secrets and their daily pages and their letters to yourself at 8 and then letters from your 8-year-old self back to yourself. You can cast off the... This kind of linear didactism that these self-help books demand of us, that growth is a straight line. The arrow of time is us. And instead, read any book. Any book. Make it a good book, but make it fiction. Because reading fiction teaches us the most crucial skill a human being can have, and that is empathy. The ability to put oneself in another's shoes and walk a metaphorical mile. Feel the triumphs of their accomplishments. Feel the pain and regret of their failures. A great book. You can be a pig in a barn and feel the first shiver of self-belief as a spider tells you, yes, indeed, Wilbur, you are some pig. You can have the regret of being a lorax and hearing the last whack of a truffula tree go down on an empty landscape. Or if you're a fatherless young boy looking for male role models, you can find belief in a sergeant-at-arms rabbit who tells you and informs you, bigwig, that the consequence of loyalty and nobility is friendship. So here's a self-help book for you. It's three steps. Find book, open book, read book. Thank you very much.
We're talking about books and education. Did you have a favourite or most memorable book that you studied at school, Tim?
Oh, it was Charlotte's Web, no question.
No, Charlotte's Web. Yeah. What about you, Nussie? Did you have a favourite book or one that was memorable?
I used to read a lot when I was at school. I really liked the Encyclopedia Jones collection. Did anyone read... those?
I don't know what Encyclopedia...
He sounds cool.
Oh, no, Encyclopedia Brown. Why. Because it wasn't him. It's Indiana Jones, Encyclopedia Brown. Guys, I've worked out my childhood.
That's Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
That one doesn't exist. Encyclopedia Brown was a young boy who was just really good at working out like mysteries, but they were like kind of domestic mysteries. Mm. Okay. And it was, yeah, I really liked it.
What about you, Rob?
A book that really affected me was in high school. It was 1984. We studied it in year 9, and it blew my mind. It just opened my mind up to what, you know, potential there was with your imagination, especially the concept of science fiction, because I'd grown up on Star Wars and the very limited view of what science fiction had to offer. And when you read that book, and it's so much more than what it is. Yeah, little year 9 me just, like, had a headgasm.
See, because when, when I was a kid, I was a horrendously more conservative. So when I read 1984, I go, this is a system that works.
And that led to this podcast.
And we have the reincarnation of Richard Burton right here.
No one would have believed. Oh.
Anyway. if we do this wrong, you'll bring out the rats, won't you?
That's right. That's our next game, How Rats. To next speak on the topic of education is Michelle Nussie, representing The Zoo. Nussie, your time starts now.
So when I first heard that our theme was education, and I was like, great, that happens all the time at The Zoo, because the animals often, they all have, like a lot of them have training for various reasons. And I was like, that's easy. And then the more I thought about it, the more I realised that education and training are not the same thing. Training is generally rote learnt, and it's, you know, you get kind of positive reinforcement for it, but it's not actual education. So I was like, all right. How can I look at education at the zoo? Also, what often happens, I think, is that humans look at animals and go, ah, they're educated because they're similar to us, right? Which I don't necessarily agree with. So I'm like, let's flip the script, guys. It was just me at the time. And I thought, all right, well, what can we learn from animals? How can animals educate us? When you look at animals, they often learn from their parents. For example, like the orangutan will stay with an orangutan baby will stay with its mother for 7 years because that's how long it takes for it to learn things around the wild. But what I wanted to talk about, 1 minute in, is African wild dogs. Now, African wild dogs, you might have seen them at Melbourne Zoo. They kind of look like really healthy hyenas. You know how hyenas just don't look healthy? If they did, they would be African wild dogs. They are amazing. They work in a pack. And I just wanted to compare them really quickly to African lions. So both African animals, both unfortunately, one's vulnerable, one's endangered, so they're disappearing from Africa. They both work in groups. They're both predators. They're both carnivores. The African lion, when they go to take down their prey, they are successful 30% of the time, which is kind of fair enough. You know, that's why they lie around so much. They conserve a lot of energy. The African wild dog, 80% of the time, they will take down their prey. And the reason is they work as a team. They look after each other. They have rituals when they develop relationships. They get each other psyched up before they go out hunting, where they, like, touch each other and make noises, and they're all like, yeah, let's go. And they look after their sick. So rather than other animals, where, like the African lion, if an African lion was sick, the rest would just leave them because it's, you know, they consider it to be better for the group. The African wild dog will look after them, bring food to them, make them, basically heal them, and then bring them back into the group. So there you go.
Well, it's always great to be learning outside the classroom. When you were at school, Nussie, did you have a favourite excursion or place that you went to as a class that you really enjoyed or was very memorable?
Oh, it's got to be... Over in Perth, we have SciTech, which is like Science Works over here, and it was just the best. Like, you talk about 1984 blowing your mind. SciTech blew my mind. They had a thongophone, which is like a giant kind of xylophone type thing, but it's with pipes and thongs.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they're awesome.
Couldn't get any more Australian than that.
I know, yeah, right?
Society, let's go and play the thongophone.
Oh,
the
bloody thongophone. Get the lagophone as well.
Yeah.
So you'd land down under.
Rowan, did you ever have a favourite excursion or anything like when you were a kid?
Yeah, like when I was in primary school, we all went to Queen Victoria Market.
And oh, I did that too.
Yeah, because we were out in the suburbs, I guess. So it's like an interesting excursion. Let's take all the suburb kids into the city to go to a fruit shop, basically. But, you know, that's how good it was. But I really liked it because we bought all this weird random stuff like sheep's brains and kidneys and stuff, and we ate it all back at school. And I don't know, I just guess I liked creepy stuff like that. Okay, this is the brain of a sheep. Mm, oh, it tastes like it
sounds
a
like the
nugget.
Hammer Horror. Yeah. Yeah. Hammer Horror fruit shop.
It is. It's like, come in here, children. Look at all the amazing treasures we've bought back from the market. Eat, eat.
They didn't have a donut van back then.
It was made of eyeballs.
Our next speaker is Rob Lloyd, representing Heroes, to present on the theme of education. Rob, your time starts now.
I'd like to talk about one hero of mine in education, and I cannot remember her name. When I was 17 in year 12, I did an HSC study day where you went and did all these little sessions down at the local RSL with all these experts in their field. And I met this one woman who was from Newtown Performing Arts High School in Sydney, and she was there to represent drama. And I really was inspired by her talk about what we needed to do to study and about the realities of you know, the acting industry outside of high school. And I went and spoke to her afterwards, and she said, well, you're working on your solo monologue piece. Do you want to present something for me? And I had a whole afternoon with her. I had no other sessions to go to. And we spent about an hour and a half running through my monologue. And at this time, I was 17 years old, living in country New South Wales. I thought I was the I thought I knew everything about acting. I'd watched every single John Hurt film, so I knew acting. Even Frankenstein Unbound. And within 5 minutes, she had torn me down to shreds in this most compassionate, friendly, open, supportive, but, you know, aggressive way to make me realize that what I knew about acting was very limited. She taught me to be in the moment. She taught me all these amazing things. And as I got in the car at the end of the day, my dad picked me up. He said, so how was your day? I burst into tears and went, I know nothing. I know nothing about acting. And my dad went, so hot chocolate then? So that changed my way of looking at acting and how I am as a teacher now and also as a performer at all because of that wonderful woman who I cannot remember her name, but she changed my life forever. Thank you.
Rob was there talking about an inspiring teacher, but I was wondering if in our lives, if there was a single teacher that was either very memorable or was perhaps a hero in our lives. Tim, did you have a teacher, any teachers like that?
Miss Cassandra Gregg, my year 10 English teacher. Mm. God, I love that woman.
Oh, yeah, what
was you say her name like a mantra? It's great.
Was she inspiring or pretty?
You can be both.
Yeah, there we go.
I don't want to paint women into a corner. You can be attractive and smart.
Thanks, buddy. Oh, wow. My career options have just doubled.
Don't mention it.
Women, where would we be without men? Sarcasm.
Our final speaker is Rowan Johnson, representing psychology, to present on the theme of education. Rowan, your time begins now.
Thank you, David. So education's all about learning. So today I want to educate you, see what I did there, on the learning theories of the creepy mind molester John B. Watson. Now, Watson believed in classical conditioning and he thought that it could like explain all aspects of human psychology. So speech, emotional responses, he thought all of this was patterns of stimulus and response. So, you know, all our individual differences in behaviour, he believed, were due to our different experience of learning. And he once famously said, give me a dozen healthy infants, well-formed, my own specified world to bring them up in, and I'll guarantee to take anyone at random and train him to become any type of specialist I might select. Doctor, lawyer, artist, merchant, thief, and yes, even beggar man and thief. Creepy, right? So someone get this a sea monkey aquarium to mess around with before he starts stalking around the maternity ward with a Hessian bag, right? So, well, unfortunately, you know, he got his hands on a baby. You know, he very much did that. And the baby's name was Little Albert. And he conditioned Little Albert in a bunch of experiments to fear, like, white fluffy things. So it's even proposed he did this without his mother's consent. So the work he did proved that Little Albert, you know, could learn to get a phobia through making associations. So he got a white rat and he put it in front of Little Albert and Little Albert played with it and this is great, this is fun, and he took it away. And then he did it again, he presented the rat again, but this time he bashed like two metal poles together bah, 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 behind the child's head and the child started crying profusely because babies don't like poles getting bashed around their head. And, you know, but the rat was there. And he did that repeatedly, repeatedly, repeatedly until he could present the rat and the child would cry. And he also cried at like a Santa Claus beard and a white rabbit and some other stuff. So The good news is, though, that, you know, this process can be reversed, but, you know, they can reverse this process, but, you know, Watson was basically, you know, he was getting through the study and then he was like, oh, well, little Albert, I've emotionally and mentally crippled you. Oh, no, would you look at the time? You're leaving tonight? Oh, well, goodbye. And little Albert sort of, you know, got taken away, whisked away by his mother before he could ever get fixed. I wonder why that was, you know what I mean? She obviously caught wind of it. So I think you can understand why Watson's granddaughter was riddled with mental illness and, you know, his son-in-law committed suicide, and they all basically blame the practical applications of his theories. And just before he died, he burnt all his letters, documents and records, or, you know, I like to call that evidence. And, you know, his theory forms a basis for advertising jingles, the terrible music choice played in supermarkets, and pokey machines. So, what a douche.
As being in the education game, Rowan, as you are, there is a thing of reverse psychology. Do you find that's a useful technique when teaching kids?
Yeah, it can be. Like, you know, at times, you know, please do this or I, you know, won't beat you. And they go, all right.
So they won't do it and then you beat them.
They won't do it and then you beat them.
Is that what reverse psychology means?
Yeah. That's why I became a teacher, to hurt children. But no, yeah, it does. I think ultimately at the end of the day, I think, you know, you just need to try and get kids on side as much as you can.
Without getting a Hessian sack.
You know, and just, you know, hope against hope that they don't, you know, overthrow you.
And we can all learn something about that, can't we? Mm. Now, unless I'm very much mistaken, that's the end of the round. So it's time for a score update from the Boffins. Boffins!
Thank you, David. According to the Grain of Truth Animal Kingdom, Nussie is in the lead with a healthy hyena. Aww.
Our next round is the analysis and application round. Our panel is divided into teams of two and must apply their skills to an application task. Rob and Rowan, I'll be challenging you to a round to out-smug each other. You need to be see who is the most smug out of the pair of you, starting with this offer about waking up. So you need to out-smug each other, starting with waking up.
I wake up so good it takes me 4 hours.
Well, when I wake up, on the right side of the bed every time.
Yeah. Well, when I wake up on the right side of the bed, I give you a kiss.
Are we out smugging each other or seducing each other?
Same thing for me, baby.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you give me a kiss...
Yeah.
It's so much more worse than anything I do ever.
Let's do a Robin Ryan!
That was a smug carpet bomb.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Wow, chicken, wow, wow.
Oh, dear. Tim and Nussie, I'll be challenging you. Sorry, I didn't mean to surprise you there. Terribly sorry. Tim and Nussie, I'll be challenging you to explain these little-known technical pieces of equipment or terminology, what they are and why they are important. So the first one I want to know is, what on earth is a glazed circuit knob?
A glazed circuit knob is something that gets used quite often, which is why it's glazed, because as we all know, shiny things are easier to find.
Mm.
So that bit's for convenience.
It is the very knob in a VCR which will confuse your instructions to program the VCR. This is put in by Sanyo early on.
Right.
You have to glaze it to keep the data flowing in the incorrect directions.
Because what was happening was people were buying VCRs, yes, programming them successfully, and then no one was calling Sanyo and they weren't... They were basically losing business. So they were like, we'll put in a glazed circuit knob. People will get really confused about it and then they'll have to get technicians out, we'll make more money... It's basically what happened.
All glazed things are evil.
Yeah.
Very true. What about the 72 VG cable? What on earth is a 72 VG cable?
I love a 72
It's
VG
much
cable.
Better than the 71.
Yes. 71 was riddled with flaws.
It was riddled.
The 72 V.
It just nailed it.
What does it even stand for? What is VG?
VG stands for...
it stands for voting...
Green.
Voting green.
Voting so green.
It's a 72 voting green cable.
Yeah, you plug in your voting preference. You think really hard. You plug in yourself into your ribcage and then to the person next to you.
Because as we all know, that's where we think.
Your ribs, you think. And then they will take on your voting preferences.
Yeah.
VG so cable, 72. Unfortunately, in 72, I think Whitlam won, so it didn't work so well.
No. Finally, the frenzied return switch.
If you're going to make a return switch, I say make it frenzied. Because those calm return switches get nothing done.
It's on the Coke vending machines.
Yeah.
It's like you're occasionally not paying attention. I thought I picked A2. Now I'm getting a Snickers. I wanted a Coke. Mm. There is below the frenzied return switch.
Yeah.
It lets out one of Nussie's African wild dogs with an 80% kill ratio. And they grab that Snickers and they return it. Yeah. Carnage through the machine.
You need to press it as if you're trying to cross the road. And if you press the button more times, it'll go green. Yeah. It's with that frenzy.
On the 117th. Consecutive push, the wild dogs are released and you get your Coke.
Fantastic. Ladies and gentlemen, Tim and Nussie. See, I said words that time. Well, that's the end of the round, so now it's up to the Boffins with the scores. Boffins!
Thank you, David. According to the Grain of Truth orienteering map, Tim is in the lead with grid reference A7.
Oh. It's Warrigal Road. That's really good.
Our next round is called And Sold. Nussie, you'll be playing the CEO of a multinational corporation. In your boardroom here, we have Rob, the ideas man. We've got Tim, who's your technical boffin. And Rowan is your man in marketing. Now, I'm going to suggest some already existing products, and your company that you run, Nussie, is going to come up with the new and improved model of this sort of thing. So we're having a big boardroom discussion on this sort of thing. The first product that your company is going to try to release is on bananas.
All right, settle down. Everyone grab your second donut and let's get to it. Very, very good, arts man. Now, bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S. Now, look, inserting them in that song helped us for a certain amount of time, but I think you'll now find it is not a current reference. We need to give bananas a push. What have you got for us, Rob?
Bananas. Curved. Straighten them. I'm the idea. Make it work. Straighten a banana. Make it work. That's the idea. Go.
All right. Straighten the banana. Make it work. Tim, can you tell us technically how would this work?
Well, that will be an app that you download onto your phone called Straightening the Banana. And you got to stretch your finger over that phone to straighten that banana. You guys have got inside my head. Straighten that
not
banana.
Surprised
when you
the guys
finally
are with
straighten
you.
The banana, that's when it happens.
What happens?
Well, we need to talk to him.
Yeah. Rowan, what happens?
When we straighten them, well, everybody goes ape. Everybody goes bananas for bananas.
Well, I mean, we could see the reaction right now. Just open up this high story window.
Yeah.
See? I'll open it again.
All right, all right, all right. Devil's advocate. It's my job. I'm the CEO, right? Devil's advocate. We get straight bananas. We've got the app. Everyone's going ape for them. What happens to those banana carriers that are already curved? What do we do, Rob? What do we do?
Incineration.
The bananas or the carrier?
Both.
Okay. Tim, how can we... Rowan, I'm going to go to you. How can we make money from incinerating a product that we sell?
Okay, basically, if we incinerate the product and then repackage it into a product that people like and resell it, then, I think that could work.
Rob, what's the new product going to be?
Dusted banana.
Dusted banana.
Dusted banana. Tim, how's it going to work?
That's an app. You download.
Yeah. Sold!
It's not my stance.
Yeah, it's definitely.
I read books.
could do it great, buddy.
If you say it's an app enough, it'll be perfectly fine.
He's so modern.
Well, that's actually an update to an app.
Oh, I see.
Ooh.
Okay, hello.
Dumb it down.
Well, that's the end of the round, so we now can cross over to the Boffins with a score update. What can you tell us, Boffins?
Yes, thank you, David. According to the Grain of Truth board meeting, Rob is in the lead by future-proofing the company's goals.
Hulk Hogan's in town, so I'm just going up for the whole, you know.
I don't record a lot of podcasts. Do people stand up this much usually?
Yeah, they do.
Rowan's like, yeah.
Yep. It's just common practice to make a whole bunch of physical gestures out to the audience that doesn't exist on the recording. Yeah.
So now every listener listening to this goes, well, do I exist or don't I exist? Damn you, psychology panelist.
No, yes.
But now it's time to reveal the answer to our Grain of Truth Connection Challenge. Firstly, did anyone on the panel get the connection between your topics? That was literature, the zoo, heroes, and psychology.
Joseph Jellyfish Sting?
Joseph Jellyfish Sting. Oh, no. Dude, sure.
tell us about him.
I don't know what neutralizes vinegar. So
oh, okay.
What is it that neutralizes vinegar?
Has anyone else got an idea?
So psychology, literature... Heroes.
And the zoo.
Well, there was a psychologist called Stanley Milgram that did a whole bunch of experiments with monkeys, which you can procure from a zoo. So that's psychology.
Very well done, Rowan.
He wrote a number of books about the subject. And just so that I can win, he was a hero of mine.
That's actually not quite. That's pretty good. It's not the one I have, but yeah, give him a round of applause.
I was gonna say Winnie the Pooh.
Oh yes, why is that?
Winnie the Pooh. Well, it's literature.
Yeah.
And the original Winnie the Pooh, the bear that was based on, was at London Zoo. Mm-hmm. So when A.A. Milne went to see the bear, that's what gave him the inspiration. It was, you know, Winnie the Pooh was a hero of mine. And Pooh stops.
Psychologically, he was tormented.
But they released a book, didn't they? The psychology of poo or something like that. They've released
the psychology of poo.
Yeah, there was a book released about the Tao of poo or something about sort of like your mindset and following the same thought processes that Winnie the Pooh has. How very basic and simple and straightforward your life can be.
Actually quite good idea. Give me a round of applause for
that. That knee yours
probably broken the knob.
That Neil's probably like the most depressed character in literature ever.
Yeah. He should have stopped getting a Kanga to sort of like get afraid of rats by banging things.
You know, I've actually read that Eeyore is a really great character for depression because he's always included in everything that they do, even though he's sad, and they never try. They just accept that that's how he is.
The thing that neutralizes vinegar being an acid, would be a base. So the connection I had was Graham base.
Graham and Amelia.
He is renowned author of children's literature and first published in 1986. One of his most famous books is Animalia, featuring many a zoo-based creature. According to his website, his favourite animal is the warthog because it is unbelievably ugly. As for the psychology component, many of his books involve a lateral thinking component and problem solving, such as The 11th Hour and Enigma. He also claims his inspiration for Animalia was a momentary madness. That was what he claims on his website. He is a hero to children and other authors alike, including US writer Jolene Navarro. And although this has nothing really to do with any of the connections, but according to his website biography, he claims that the worst food he has ever eaten was stinky bishop cheese. Oh. So there's a fun fact about Graham
and
Base.
Do you know he had a residency at Melbourne Zoo when he was writing Animalia?
No, I did not. Well, there you go.
I knew that. No, I still didn't get it.
Well, I think that's it's end of that particular program, so it's over to the Boffins to determine who has won another brick in the wall.
Thank you, David. Our overall winner for this episode is Michelle Nutty!
What are you going to do with your brick in the wall?
Well, seeing as though it's another brick in the wall, I guess I'll just put it with all his friends.
Oh.
You could buy a new guitar. You can drive a more powerful car. No Pink Floyd fans. Oh, wow. Shame on you.
You've said that one before. Now, I shouldn't laugh before I have to do this bit, should I? Okay. Oh, God. I'm going to have the steely breath of Rob Lloyd down my neck as I attempt this.
You're doing great.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, sweetie. Okay. Are you licking my ear?
No, that's just my beard.
Oh, okay. Oh, thank you. That's the end of the program, and I hope you enjoyed it. You can come and see the Grain of Truth recording on the first Saturday of the month at 1 p.m. at the Wesley. And our website is www.grainoftruth.com. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/Grain of Truth Show, and on Twitter at Grain of Truths. And that leads me to thank our panel, Tim Rebbin, Michelle Nassi, Rob Lloyd, Rowan Johnson, our author of the week, Brendan Jelly, our composer, Matthew Hagrave, arranged by Michael Bell of Orange Studios, our logo designer, Tom Markovich, our restorer, Armin Fadeen, property manager, Seth Dresser, and official palm editor, Asher Cameron, our venue, the Wesley Hand. I have been your host, David Innes. Have a splendid day. This has been an Adjusted Knob production.